We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
It's more than just sports talk. This is The Morning Shift.
I'm in.
Me too.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Back here on the
morning shift, I'm talking
top
about
of the hour, and it is brought to you by Zero Res.
This is upbeat enough for
lasting,
you, Tim.
This is upbeat enough. Now, this is a whiskey tango anthem I can get on board with.
You say, are you guys
done? I don't even know what that means.
You don't know what whiskey tango is?
I don't know what that means, but it sounds provocative. I don't know.
Easy, Will Ferrell. It's not provocative.
It's just explanatory. It's we'll let it marinate and then we'll come back. We'll circle back. That's what you say in the corporate world.
Think of the first two letters and other meanings that those combinations of letters could have.
All right. So how about them Falcons? How about the Falcons?
You're so good
rookies
at transitions.
You know? I like to make it as awkward as I possibly can because being awkward just comes.
Do you do that in your
naturally.
Public speaking when you're like, you know, wooing the crowd?
Do what? Be awkward?
Yes.
No. I try to.
She tries to make it smooth, man.
Make it, you know. Sometimes the awkwardness comes out. It just
smooths out the crowd.
Can't,
you know
sometimes
I mean?
Just
it's like you just can't contain it.
Can't contain
it's like
it.
A gift.
It really is. I just try to lean into it. All right. So, okay, we're talking about. Rook, Arororo, and Braylon Trice. So you got your defensive tackle out of Clemson. You got your linebacker out of Washington. And we just are looking at, you know, how these guys are going to be able to impact this team.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, Tiff, that we were trying to watch the Rams defense as well and how they use guys like Byron Young, which Mike has compared he and Braylon Trice. And what role Rukwe would have? Because I don't think he's Aaron Donald in this defense, Mike.
No, he's not. And it's tough because I do think that there are some things that he does that are Donald-esque. But what you essentially have is a guy that's going to play the four eye or the four. And what I mean by that is you're either head up to the offensive tackle away from him. Or you're in the B gap, like you're playing a wide three technique in the B gap and kind of playing on the guards movement. So I think that's what he's going to be asked to do. I don't know that for sure. When you look at what the Rams asked their four eye to do, and it was, you know, Jonah Williams or a number of other guys last year in that system due to injuries and other, you know, kind of things going on, very handsy players. And I don't think that's him. And so I think he is a guy who is going to rip the arm, get into the backfield, do a number of other things to kind of be explosive and gain penetration, whereas I don't know if that's the role they love out of that four-eye player in that Rams defense. So they're gonna find something that he is comfortable doing. I do wonder if we go back to last year's Zach Harrison in the last year's draft class, if that's more of the guy that kind of fits that four-eye role, standing up the tackle, taking on the double teams long, compress somebody. Maybe that's where his role is, because we have wondered out loud, haven't we? How does Zach Harrison and some of these other players that fit so well in the last year's scheme, how do they translate, Ryan Nielsen's scheme into what they'll be asked under Jimmy Lake? So maybe that's for him, and maybe they can both kind of develop one another, but that's a handsy player. I'm not sure that Rukwe is there yet, but I think he's got the explosion and the athletic ability to do it if they want him to.
Well, we had Mike Dettillier join us on the show. He is a college football and NFL analyst. He's on WWL in New Orleans. And he said he was surprised that the Falcons drafted Rukwe at 35. You know, they traded up to get him.
It surprised me a little
bit he went that high, but he is a really good-looking athlete who can run the field. He wants to hit the home run. Sometimes, though, his technical part of the game is not very good, and he's got to get better at that, at staying lower and fighting off blocks better at the point of attack.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about. So you turn on his film, and we're talking about Rook. You turn on his film, and it's a lot of penetration. It's a lot of getting in the backfield and getting sacks. It's a lot of stunts.
Step stuff.
Right. He's explosive, and that's why you draft a guy at the 35th pick. And you say to yourself, if you're Terry, can we fix his hands? Like, you look at Raheem and whoever else is in that room, and you go, can we fix his hands? Can he become that player that plays down the line of scrimmage instead of across the line of scrimmage, right? And that's the difference we've talked about. How many times have we talked about the difference between a four-down line front and a three-down line front, a 3-4 defense? A lot of times it is in a 3-4, the picket fence, two-gap style, playing down the line of scrimmage, making sure everybody's on the same plane. And a lot of times when you go to the four-down defense, it is penetration, wreaking havoc in the backfield, setting up the edge, everything else, and doing things differently. So I don't think he's going to have any problem being explosive. And I also think that, look, if you want to look at some high upside, you can bring him in on a third down if you don't trust whoever else is in there as the run defender, and he's going to get into the backfield. He's going to rip into the backfield and use his shoulders. It's just, how soon can you get him to be that three down, every down player, and how soon can he transition into the role that Raheem wants him to play?
Well, let's turn to Braylon Trice, the linebacker out of Washington, taken in the third round. And Mike Dettillier gave his overall thoughts on him as a player.
Trey Hendrickson in him. He's a long, lean guy. He's not the greatest athlete, but he is a try-hard, pedal-to-the-metal, very instinctive guy who whoever has coached him well. And his ability to make a move and then counter-move off of that to get into the backfield. Now, he's not going to win the Olympics, all these combine workout stuff, but he wins out on the field, and he's a presence there as a pass rusher and also in run support. Does a nice job there. And you can stand him up, put his hand in the dirt. He's effective both ways. I like that pick a lot. And I thought he would go a little quicker than what he did. And a lot of that having to do, maybe he didn't hit all these athletic marks that some teams were looking for in an edge guy. All I know is he beats the hell out of the guy he's up against. He wins.
Physical.
That's all that matters. That's all that matters.
Yeah, it's physical. And when you read some of the stuff written about him as far, well, really not even reading, just look at the stats. I mean, his tackles for loss, last two seasons at Washington, he's had 23.5 tackles for loss, 16 sacks, but he's led the FBS in defensive pressures. And I think that's important because you hear what both Brock Heward, who we played earlier, who a Fox college football analyst and covered University of Washington for 7-10 in Seattle, and who also played quarterback, talked about him. And Mike Dettillier, they both said, well, we think that basically because he didn't look and test as well as the Latus and the Dallas Turners and the Jared Verses of the world, he fell. And that looks really good for the Falcons right now, because you might not have those athletic things that jump out on paper or in testing, but you have the ones on film that do it. And Mike and I were watching it, Tiff, earlier. And Mike, what was the one thing that we kept coming back to when we watched Braylon Trice play?
He's got all the moves. He's got the whole repertoire. He's got he's well rounded. There's a rip move. There's I call it the windshield wiper when you use both hands to kind of, knock it back and forth. And he runs stunts well, man. He's explosive in the backfield. And there was a number of times watching him that I swear, and immediately afterwards, we're watching the Rams, it looks like Byron Young. Like, he literally, in that role, looks like Byron Young. Byron Young's a little bit faster than him. You go back to Braylon Trice, I think it was a 4.7, 40-yard dash as far as the combine goes. So, it's like I said, if he was a little bit faster and a little bit bigger, you'd be talking about him winning the Olympics and stuff like that. But, for what that is and what he's asked to do, his splits are good, his production's good, and he's a good, hard-nosed player. And I think for, as far as all these picks the Falcons had, he has the best value because you did get him in the third round, and he is an extremely productive player, and he fits well into what they're going to ask him to do, I think, as far as rushing the passer and setting the edge.
And I'd be curious to know what Coach Morris thinks about your comparison there, because you said he's, what, just like Byron Young, right?
Yeah, I mean, he is. That's the role.
And that's what you have to do when you're getting, you know, new players with a new staff. You got to go back and see how they use similar build guys, especially when they're drafting them. Jimmy Lake knows Braylon Trice a little bit. He's somewhat familiar, so he kind of knows some of the ways he can be used. I mean, that's such a plus when you draft guys that you kind of know. You also know about his work ethic, the human being, the character of what he is. I mean, that's important. Trice is lined up in 2-point and 3-point stances, so he can come out of either one, because all this talk, and I think this is extremely important to talk about, all this talk, Tiff, about the 3-4 and they're switching to this 3-4, you pull up Rams film from last year, what do you see?
Four down fronts, usually 4-3s, you know, depending on what personnel the other teams are kind of employing. There is a lot of four down front. And you look at, I mean, you just have to look at the defensive line and look at the guys they had, the players they had. I would be using four down too. You want to get all those guys on the field as far as the guys they had playing defensive line last year, so why not go with a four down?
But you mentioned the players they had, and that's the big thing. They had a lot of young guys. Yes, you had Aaron Donald, but I think it's so key. And what you were mentioning with Jimmy Lake already having some familiarity with Trice. But again, you have a head coach now that has, yes, all the years of experience, but most recently is coming off of having led a defense that had to try to put things together early on because everyone kind of doubted them with the amount of young talent that they had. But it did come together, you know, and they were, what, a playoff team?
Yeah, they were, and they had, whatever you think or don't think about the team, I thought the defense played pretty well last year for the most part.
Towards the second half of the, yeah.
But look at what Raheem has to work with here. And I think that, again, you'll see very similar to some of the things they did last year, where it's 4-3, 3-4, doesn't matter. It's all based on what the offense is running. But you got guys like Grady Jarrett. What role will he play moving forward? David Onyemata, what role? You mentioned Zach Harrison, Mike, a guy who's only 6'6", 275. I mean, what could they do with him? And we've got guys that we'll talk about tomorrow, like J.D. Bertrand and Brandon Dorlus, and what roles they could fit in this defense, because we're obviously going to go day by day and talking about this, some of these guys. So that to me is who will play the Aaron Donald type position. And right now, the way the roster, I would say Grady Jarrett. I mean, maybe Brandon Dorlus, who we'll get to tomorrow.
I think it's hard to project because we don't have a Bobby Brown, who was their nose guard last year. And you look at Bobby Brown, you say that guy's 325. We just don't have a body type like that on the roster.
I think
and Zion Logue could be that guy, but you don't expect a sixth rounder to step in right away. You can't expect that of him.
Well, based on guys they had last year, I think Timmy Horn would be the closest, who's 6'4", 320-ish.
I think what you're going to end up asking guys to do, and remember, we have Kentavious Street that did get signed back. I think what you're going to end up asking guys to do is maybe David Onyemata plays a little bit of that nose guard role. He's just not nearly as big of a body as you would want that kind of zero, that shade nose to be. I mean, like I said, 325, David Onyemata, I don't know that he was even 300 in the middle of the season last year. I don't know what he's listed at, right?
But he's listed at 6'3", 300. So
yeah, I would highly, highly doubt that in the middle of the last season that David Onyemata was 300 pounds.
And some of that's about strength too, right?
I mean, for sure.
But the problem is the reason you want bigger dudes, and correct me if I'm wrong, is you can have all the strength you want, but you're going to wear down as games go on. So both, you know, the offensive line and the defensive line are wearing down, so the bigger body makes it a little bit harder to move as the game goes along.
You have to think of it as a boxing match, right? I mean, you have guys that are quicker and maybe better leverage, but eventually the heavyweight's going to keep punching you and leaning on you, and you'll wear down.
We've got some great insight on the way on this show. We're going to talk with Eric McLean, who's a college football analyst for ESPN and ACC Network. He'll join us later on. But up next, we've got Dave Archer for you, the former Falcons quarterback and analyst for the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network. We're going to get some more takes on these drafts from the 2024 NFL Draft for the Falcons. That's next year on The Morning Shift on Sports Radio 99 The Game.
But it's provocative. Gets the people going.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy.
Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
What are the haps? Start the day the right way with the Morning Shift.
With Tiffany, Mike, and Bo.
All right.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Back here on the Morning Shift and going straight to the WadeFord.com hotline. That is where we find Atlanta Falcons radio network analyst and former Falcons QB, Dave Archer, joining us two times this week, Dave.
The man, the legend.
You know? Psych. Dave, are you with us?
I'm there. You gotta push the button to let me talk.
Come on, Day Day.
No, man.
Dave, good to have you back with us.
No talking for you.
Always good to be with you. Glad everything's working very, very on schedule there. Sounds like you guys got everything working perfectly.
Very on brand for us. It's the Bo Morgan effect. That's what we like to call
it. That's
what
it is.
Mm-hmm. Don't blame me.
Works a little bit. You gotta blow out the cartridge, maybe give it a shake.
This isn't an old school Nintendo. Look, when I was on the other side of the glass, Sega it was Genesis. Smooth operating, all right?
Yeah, yeah. Don't you throw those guys under the bus. Dave, does he do
they
this
They just
with
threw
you guys
themselves and... under the bus.
Yeah, he's a finger pointer. No question about it.
Well, Dave has the draft. You know, it's been, what, it ended this weekend. Yeah. We talked to you Monday. Have you had time to let it fully sink in, all the Falcons draft picks?
Yeah, I mean, obviously when you marinate on it and you get an idea of kind of their direction, if they give you a little bit of insight, which they did. I thought Terry and Raheem gave you a little insight as to what they were thinking about some things. But I think you got a lot of versatility among the guys that you picked. I think there's a lot of – obviously, it's a team, I think when you look at the front liners, especially on the offensive side of the ball, you like what you're looking at. There's probably a couple of needs that they could have filled defensively. And it looks like they did some of that from a depth standpoint. You know, obviously the one that sticks out is corner. Did you feel like you did enough in free agency with the acquisition of Antonio Hamilton and Kevin King, where the guys you have returning and Clark Phillips and Dee Alford and obviously AJ Terrell, do you feel good about where you are there from a depth standpoint? And I'm sure there's still an acquisition or two we'll still look at probably between now and camp, and who knows, maybe even in training camp and acquisition. So still looking at that a little bit. But I thought they did a good job adding some depth and guys that can be part of the rotation.
Dave, I'm going to let you and our listeners in on a little behind the scenes. So every time we have a guest on, usually I'll open it up, and then these two bicker about who gets the next question. Mm. And so I wanted to ask you, who would you like to receive
the next question? Oh, my God.
You know he's
going to
say
from?
Mike.
Yeah, I'll talk to the football player. Let me talk to the
player. Sorry, listen, and Dave, here's the thing. The only grade from this weekend, and this was my first question, the only grade from this weekend is, what did you think of Squidbilly's video from Friday night? Would you get a scale from 1 through 10? A lot of huddle signals going on, a lot of finger mesh.
Yeah, I thought there was. I'll give him a six. I thought that. I thought the height of the camera was the biggest issue. I mean, he's already short, but I mean, my goodness, how much shorter are you with the camera where you located it?
Well, that's what happens when you let a guy that's like 6'5" record it. Because my buddy Bristow, he's pretty tall. He recorded. But Arch, when I was breaking down Braylon Trice from what I saw from him on film, and you know, reading about him, and I was giving an expert analysis. You know,
sure.
He's a guy that doesn't stand out as far as measurables go. Like, he's not a Dallas Turner or a Latu kind of athlete with what they were talked about, even a Chop Robinson. But he has a full repertoire of moves. He led the FBS the last 2 years in pressures. What else are you seeing from Braylon Trice as far as what he could come in here and do? Because it looks like he's a guy that doesn't need to be – I mean, obviously he'll come along, but he kind of walks in here day one ready to go.
Yeah, I think he's polished, I think is what you're saying. I think he's polished and has a pretty good idea and a plan as to how he wants to attack. Obviously, Jimmy Lake and everybody will probably work on it with some techniques and things that are going to work at this level. Things, and Mike's talked about this, things, the snap count or whether it's the guy you're going to play against, it's the best of the best at this level, so you better come with a wide array of repertoire to be able to get to the passer or to affect the run game. And I think this guy's a smart guy. He's played a lot of football. And the thing that I like about him, and Terry talked about this, and we got a couple of guys like this. J.D. Bertrand is the same way. They're both team captains off of their team, and I think that's something they look for, a trait that a guy's going to come work. I think that whenever you're vested like that and you're trusted with the leadership of your team, the way those two guys were from a captain standpoint, that means those are guys you're going to look to come in and really bust their rear end to get ready to go. And not that there'll be a captain here right now, but they come in with that mentality that I've got to work and I've got to be a trendsetter and I've got a guy to set the tempo. And I think that that's what Trice does as well.
I want to talk about Ruka Rororo, Dave, because I watch this film, and I try to compare it to what the Rams were doing defensively last year and just try to get an idea of what they saw when they watched him, right? I don't think he's nearly as polished. There's a lot of shoulder playing, a lot of rip moves. He does penetrate a lot. What do you see from him? I looked at maybe he's the four-eye, maybe that head-up four, almost like an old-school Brett Kiesel from the Pittsburgh Steelers kind of role. But when I watch him on film, it doesn't say that. He's not handsy enough for that position, so I don't think he's Aaron Donald in that defense, and just kind of what your expectations are of what they'll ask him to do and what how you think he kind of fits in.
Well, I think the first thing that jumps off at you, Mike, and you talked about it some, is just the athleticism, the explosiveness that he has. Now, how does he implement that? How does he put some of the techniques together? We just talked about how, you know, Trice is going to have to, you know, continue to work on his game. Solo Rook, he's going to have to continue to work on his game as far as the techniques and things he can get away with. I know that you had a draft analyst on that says he plays a little bit too high, you know, and obviously in the run game, that's not going to work. You're going to have to get your body weight down and get your behind the pads. But I do think that the way they're going to ask him to play, probably what you saw on tape is the way they're going to ask him to play here, is he's going to be able to pick a side and try to rip through. And I think that from a penetration standpoint, he's a guy that can do those kind of things. I think the part that jumps out for me on him is I think there's position versatility. I don't know that he could play the one over the nose, but I think he can play all the way out to a five, you know, and I think that he did some of that at Clemson. And when you begin to look at what they want to do with putting maybe three down linemen on the field and four guys at that next level that can all run, I think he becomes one of those guys that's a disruptor, a penetrator, and then he creates running lanes for the second level guys to get through and make plays against the run game and maybe even in the blitz package to get after the passer. So I think his position versatility, and Brandon Dorlus falls in the same category out of Oregon. Both of them can play all the way across the front and did in their college career. And I think that was part of what they were looking for too, were guys who were disruptive and quick, but also versatile. And, you know, last year we had a problem on that defensive front with all those injuries. I think that's why they really bolstered that with three guys essentially that are defensive tackles.
We got Dave Archer joining us here, Atlanta Falcons radio network analyst and former Falcons QB. Dave, when we're talking about guys who's polished, maybe who needs to be polished a little bit more, How does a rookie make that transition into not just relying on their pure athleticism, but also, you know, becoming more of a polished player?
Well, you take a look at the guys. There's nobody better in a defensive line room than Grady Jarrett. This is a guy that came in as a fifth-round draft pick, and Grady was undersized. They talk about his technique, all the kind of things that he didn't have. And he's turned himself into the one of the more respected defensive tackles in the National Football League. And so when you've got guys like that, David Onyemata, who's created an identity for himself as one of the top defensive tackles in the league, or a guy that's disruptive on game day, I mean, you've got some examples sitting right next to you in the room, and then you watch how they go about their study, how they go about things to look for on tape, and then how do they implement that physically on the practice field and continue to get better. What techniques are they you working on? Ask questions, all those kind of things for young players. And that's where I think that if you got guys that are former team captains, guys that are in those leadership roles, those are things they're going to do. They're going to ask these guys. They're going to be quiet and sit there and wait for their opportunity. They're going to be aggressive. They know this is a team that's on the come, and they were drafted here for a reason. So I think all those things add up to a guy working on his techniques and becoming more polished as he moves into his career.
Arch, one of the guys I wanted to ask about is Brandon Dorlus, who's, you know, he's 6'3", 285, but he's extremely athletic. I mean, he's got a good first step. He kind of flashes at the point of attack. What do you expect him to do in this defense? Because this is where I think people are seeing all these defensive tackles being taken, and it feels like even with Root, these guys can kind of move all over the line.
Yeah, that's the point we were talking about. Aurora, the ability to play in multiple places, and Dorlus has that same ability. If you're going to play him at a three, he has the ability to do that. He can slide out if they want to play a true four, a three-man line. He can slide out and play a five over the tackle. He can do all those kind of things. I think that was part of why they took these guys from a position versatility standpoint, as I was talking about earlier, that they can come in and slide up and down because injury is going to happen. I mean, Grady's coming back off a knee. We had, Onyemata was down for a few games last year. I mean, we were playing guys off the street that you were trying to plug in. These are guys that you all liked and you looked on tape and you saw that their ability to slide up and down the line and play in multiple places. And then you're fresh. You're rotating guys in. Sometimes guys get banged up because they're having to play too many snaps. So if you can rotate guys in, you can trust them to play at different locations, then that makes you even deeper as well. So I think that he adds all of that.
Dave, I think as fans of a team, sometimes you get into the later rounds and everything, you kind of start to merge everything together. It kind of blurs in. It's on Saturday afternoon, but we did take three guys in round six. You got Jason McClellan, the running back at Alabama, Casey Washington, wide receiver, and Zion Logue out of Georgia, the defensive tackle. Of those three guys, I mean, who would you think might make the most immediate impact and might be at a position of need?
Well, when I looked at Casey Washington, I thought that the thing that immediately jumped to mind was Russell Gage for me. I remember the previous group brought in Russell Gage, late-round draft pick at LSU. He had not played very much at receiver. He played some his senior year, but didn't have a lot of numbers attached to his name. But he ended up coming and being a big-time special teams player for him. That's what I envisioned Casey Washington. He's a good big athlete, 6'2", about 200, 210 pounds. He can run well. I mean, he's had some moments as a receiver. I think he had almost 220 yards in his last game against Northwestern, playing in his last game. And I think he had 85, I'm kind of thinking off the top of my head. I think he had 85 opportunities, ball thrown his direction. He only had three drops, so very, very secure with hands and things of that nature where he catches the football cleanly when he gets on the field as an offensive player. But when you begin to look at McClellan and you look at Washington and Lodge, these are guys that are going to contribute probably from a rotational standpoint, maybe the big guy from Georgia more in a rotational standpoint to get in and spell some of those guys along the defensive front. But for Gage and McClellan, they're going to come in and they're going to be core special teams guys. And I think that the guy that sticks out for me is Washington, Casey Washington. I keep saying Gage. Russell Washington, or Casey Washington stepping into that area and playing kind of that similar mode that Russell Gage did. I was very impressed with how Gage came in and did his business and learned the game. I think that's what they're expecting from Washington as well. So you're just looking for depth guys that can add to special teams and guys that can go make plays.
Twice in 1 week, we got lucky. Dave, thank you.
Well, sorry you're having to deal with Bo every day, though. So I
apologize. Yeah, I know.
That
kind of brings me down. But
you know what? Pick on me. Pick on the little guy.
Yeah.
Doesn't it say something when everyone feels the same way?
Little is the operative word, that's for sure.
And he drops the mic as he goes out.
It's not uncommon for him.
This guy's going to need a neck brace, so many people in his
Dave,
head.
We appreciate the insight.
Bunch of pile jumpers.
See you guys.
Thanks, man.
Hey, this segment has been brought to you by the Good Feet
Looks like a
store.
Keith Brooking highlight film in here.
You stop it. I'm reading what? This. This segment has been brought to you by the Good Feet Store. Call 1-800-NEW-FEET or visit mygoodfeet.com.
Hold it together. You're all right.
That was Dave Archer joining us before on the way for that.
I got it, Tiff. We got a mic'd up coming up
on
the other
side. Dave is an analyst for the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network for Atlanta Falcons QB. You can follow him on X at Dave Archer.
Clearly a good friend
16.
Of mine.
Coming up on the other side, we're going to get to a little more Atlanta Braves. We also got Top 5 Tuesday. We're going to top 5 draft classes in the NFL from 2024. You don't want to miss that. We'll break it down 5-1. Be shocked, I think, who might be number one going off the board. That's coming up on the other side. Sports Radio, 99 The Game.
Good feet, Mike.
Yes, it is a lovely morning, isn't it?
Now, more of the morning shift
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Gotta get dip. Gotta get dip. Gotta get dip. Gotta get dip, 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 dip.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean. Get you caught up on the Braves.
They're playing those mid-2000s.
I know. See, this is, you're speaking to me. Now all I need is for you to go through Ultimate Dance Party 97, that disc.
I got that. Now that's what I call music volume 4.
It's basically the equivalent of that. There's like Ultimate Dance Party 96, 97, 98. It was great.
The kids now, just it's a Spotify playlist. You know what I mean?
I downloaded it on iTunes so I don't have it again. Because I used to have, I don't even know where all my CDs are. Who knows?
My Spotify's got a DJ on it.
Yeah?
Like, it's like, it'll pop up. I'm your DJ. And the guy like will say your name. And then he'll play like some of your most played stuff or something that resembles it.
Does he mix the songs in at the end?
Yeah, he does. You don't get to hear the end of the song. I don't really like that part. But I'm like, I want to hear the end.
All right.
Oh, man.
We get you caught up on the Braves. So their opening game against the Mariners did not go in their favor. Mitch Garver's home run in the ninth inning gave Seattle a 2-1 win over Atlanta.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. What was first pitch? About 9:40 last night here. And I was like, I was like, man, I can't wait to see Max Fried on the hill. And then it's like 9:30 comes around. Obviously, we're up early. And I'm like,
No way, man,
it's going to be a struggle. So I watched the first couple innings, and he was lights out. Max Fried was lights out. He didn't give up a hit. Didn't give up a hit through his six innings, and neither did Bobby Miller from the Seattle Mariners. But in the end, A.J. Minter leaves a cutter, middle up. I think it was right about 89 or 90 miles an hour, and it lands 450 feet out into the patio out there in left field. So the Seattle Mariners are able to pull it off in the end. They're a good team. Like, we're not, it's not the Mariners of past. I know that people that haven't paid much attention to the West Coast teams or the Seattle Mariners in general go, oh man, the Braves lost the Mariners last night. They were sleepwalking. They had a travel day. They said, Mariners are a good team. Like, they have good players on their team. They are a solid squad. They are, above 500, and they're going to win some games.
Well, Seattle's won games like they won last night with guys like Bryce Miller going out there and throwing shutout, but, one run. On two hits while striking out 10. That's why his ERA is right at 2. That's what they have been able to win games with their pitching staff being dominant while their hitters have struggled to start the season. And honestly, we're struggling too. I mean, Matt Olson, Ronald Acuna, Austin Riley, those guys are not tearing the cover off the ball right now, especially Olson and Acuna. So we've been carried by guys like Michael Harris and Marcell Ozuna and Travis d'Arnaud being hot. So it's one of those deals where this is what this Braves look. Go out. Look, win tonight. Let's figure the rest out. You got to go down, I think, to L.A. next. So it's a nice West Coast road trip to cut your teeth on. And hopefully, these road trips, you want to come out 500, really, honestly.
Do you remember, and this is the first thing that popped in my head this morning, do you remember probably somewhere between 15 and 20 years ago, Johan Santana's pitching for the Mets? He is obviously, left-handed. He's not as hard of a thrower as Max Fried, but he was pitching in a game where he was throwing a no-hitter, and they kept letting him go. And I think he got up to somewhere around like 137 pitches. Mm. And the manager afterwards, and I can't remember who it was for the Mets at the time, he's doing his postgame presser after Johan Santana throws a no-hitter. And like I said, it's at like 140 pitches. And he's looking at the press conference, and he's not even happy. He's like looking at all the guys asking questions, and they're like, oh, you know, aren't you excited? And he's like, yeah. Yeah, I am. You know, you can't pull him in that situation. And I swear, dude, it was not even a month or 2 months later, Johan Santana's having Tommy John surgery.
That was 2012.
I know that it made him sick, and that's the reason you have to pull a guy like Max Fried while he's throwing a no-hitter. He gets up to 100 pitches. He's obviously, you know, a guy that's dealt with injuries, you know, recently. You cannot afford to lose a guy like that off your staff, especially with Spencer Strider being down. And so you pull him after six. Even though he's throwing a no-hitter, there's really no question of what you need to do in that situation.
Yeah, that was Terry Collins. In this situation with the Braves already having a guy lost to the season, your ace, so to speak, and then you couldn't lose your other. I mean, the luxury the Braves had coming into the season is they had two ace caliber pitchers.
If not three with Sale, honestly. Yeah. He has been in the past.
But coming into the season, you had two guys that you knew could fight it out for the ace. And when Strider went down, it was automatically handed over to Fried, you needed him to be the ace of the staff. And the last two starts, since the first two starts, he struggled, and then he's pretty much locked it in and started being the guy we've known to like, we've become to know, I guess, is a better way to put it.
All right, top five Tuesday, top five NFL draft classes. Let's hit them mic'd up.
It's time to rant.
Excuse me?
It's time to rage.
It's time for Mic'd Up
on the Morning Shift.
Top five Tuesday on Mic'd Up, and you already know the direction we're going. It's top five NFL draft classes from this past draft. Now, some guys did it better than others, and I don't want to focus on the Atlanta Falcons here because I know that no matter who you read, they've all got their ideas of what the Falcons did right and what they didn't do right and where they traded up and who they got and whatever else. That's neither here nor there. No matter who you read, they're all going to mostly have the Falcons in their bottom 10, but I want to focus on who actually did do a good job, not the Falcons didn't, but who I thought had the best draft. All right, so we'll go ahead and start with number five.
Number five,
I'm actually going to go out west here to our buddy Jim Harbaugh. All right, number five, the Los Angeles Chargers. I love Joe Alt as a prospect. He was actually kind of compared to a bigger version of Jake Matthews. I think he does a lot of good things. And then you get Ladd McConkey in the second, in a team that really needed wide receiver help. I thought they got good value on him. Justin Aboigbe, we talked about, out of Alabama, that plays the defensive tackle spot. And Cam Hart, the cornerback, amongst other picks. I thought that Jim Harbaugh did a pretty nice job in his first draft back in there.
Yeah, I like the way some of the draft came along once he got through it. The Ladd McConkey pick, that's the one for me. I think you were able to shore up the offensive line and still get a wide receiver that is expected to come in here and make an instant impact.
And they got a great pass protector for Justin Herbert. Yeah. So
that's a great point. Yeah. Great point. Had to have an offense tackle. All right, let's move along.
Number four,
I'm going to go with the Baltimore Ravens. I thought that there was a lot of good value in their picks. Now, I don't know that any of these guys are game-changing, and I kind of don't love the fact that the whole story coming off cornerback Nate Wiggins was Dabo Sweeney was calling the Ravens being like, hey, you got to take this guy. But Nate Wiggins, great player. I think Roger Rosengarten is a good offensive tackle. I think Tez Walker, who's a guy who we talked about a ton at the wide receiver position, as a possibility. And then you got Devin Leary kind of later in the draft as a quarterback option when you kind of get down to it. And when you add all those guys together, I think it's a very, very solid draft class for a team that still has a lot of top-tier players as far as guys already on their roster.
Well, what I like is the value they got in TJ Tampa, getting him late. I don't know why he fell, but I remember watching that kid play at Iowa State. He could play. That, to me, is you got two quality corners, like Nate Wiggins, a local guy here from Atlanta, obviously played at Clemson. But you got two, to me, quality players in college when they were in college at the cornerback position to shore up an already really pretty good defense last year.
And you got Derrick Henry in free agency. So shaped up pretty good for them.
Talk to me. All right, let's move on.
Number three,
actually, a lot of people thought this team kind of won the draft. For me, it's a little bit lower. The Pittsburgh Steelers. They got Troy Fatanu, the offensive guard, offensive tackle, and they also shored up the inside with Zach Frazier. Peyton Wilson, who got a ton of value out of Peyton Wilson. I mean, he's a guy who was an All-American. I don't know if you saw the reports coming out that he doesn't have an ACL in one of his knees. That was one of the reasons he absolutely tumbled down draft boards. He's had some knee issues. He is a thumper at linebacker, and I think a lot of the medicals kind of force him lower. But he's a really good player, and so you ended up getting good value, and I think he finally fell far enough to where the Steelers were like, you know what? Kind of worth the risk at this point, man. But I got the Steelers right there. You shore up the middle of that offensive line. You get Roman Wilson, the wide receiver, who is a very, very good player. And then you get a number of guys along the defensive front, Ryan Watts, Logan Lee. And like I said, Peyton Wilson, really, really good player.
Yeah, I like Roman Wilson a lot. He's a good catcher of the ball, Mike. And he's very
good catcher of the ball.
Very fast.
Got his mitts on.
But he's not a prototypical Arthur Smith quarterback. When you look at him, he's only 5'11", 185, 190 pounds. So he's not necessarily the big-bodied guy that Arthur Smith's offenses normally have, but they do have Pickens, who's a bigger guy. But he's a feisty guy. He played for Michigan. You know what that means?
He's a Michigan man?
He'll run block.
Oh, okay.
I feel like a lot of these lists, and I keep going back to, okay, well, here's what they did in free agency to kind of go with what they did in the draft. But that's what a lot of these grades, articles, they're factoring in that as well. So, yeah, I'd say that's – what did you have, Matt, again? Three?
Three.
Okay, I think I know who one is.
I know him.
Who do you think one is?
Well, I don't want to give it away.
Tell me who you think one is right now.
I think it's the Eagles.
Who do you think, Tiff?
That was going to be mine.
Let's move on to number two.
Number two.
Number two is the Philadelphia Eagles. Number two, the Philadelphia Eagles. I think a lot of people did have them at one as well, like the Steelers. Quinyon Mitchell. Phenomenal player. You got Cooper DeGene as your other cornerback. You had to have those guys.
DeGene or DeJean?
I don't know. I'm not going to try to make it more difficult than it needs to be.
Like the mustard.
My favorite pick out of all these is Aeneas Smith, the wide receiver out of Texas A&M. Yeah, we talked about it on Saturday. Huge fan of his. You also got Jeremiah Trotter, who's kind of gone viral.
His dad, yeah.
His dad was a big part of that organization. And you got Will Shipley, the running back, man. I think he's done a lot of good things. There are a number of players that they got, I think, excellent value out of. So I think you could have been correct in saying that I could have had them at number one.
You probably have maybe the Commanders.
What do you think?
Might be your number one.
Let's see. Who was not mentioned?
When she zags, are you going to?
You're going to be wrong.
I think you have the Bengals.
Let's go to number one.
Hold on.
Number one.
Comment.
Number one is the Commanders.
Woo!
All right, go ahead and get in. What do you have to say about the Eagles?
No, moments passed.
All right. Number one, we have the Commanders. And I just love this because I was in love with Jaden Daniels as a prospect. They didn't make it any more difficult than it needed to be. Let's go up and get Jaden Daniels. And obviously, everybody's going to talk about Caleb Williams and what he's going to do in Chicago. Jaden Daniels, as far as that number two slot goes, never a doubt. Johnny Newton, the defensive tackle we talked about till we were blue in the face, ends up in Washington. Mike Sanders still the cornerback. I'm a huge fan, and I might not be a bigger fan of anybody in this draft than Ben Sinnott, the tight end out of Kansas State. My goodness, he plays the H-back role. He's a fullback. He can go up and get the ball. Just a really, really good player. Luke McCaffrey you got later in the draft, so a huge draft for the Washington Commanders. Man, I love it. I love it.
Any final nugget for you that you want to get in?
You like Jaden Daniels? Like that pick? Like it?
You got 5 seconds. Let's go.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of a no-brainer, too. Kind of a layup.
Had to.
That's like missing a layup in a drill.
Don't do
that. That was your top five Tuesday. You can weigh in on who you think won the draft in our wake-up call. You can call us at 404-726-0929. Wake-up call is next on The Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.